It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. I'm Jade Hindman. Today's show is about engaging kids with learning outside of the classroom. Here's to conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. We'll start the conversation talking about how valuable museums are to children.
Museums are great places to learn because they're set up and designed for families and kids to learn together.
Then we'll shift the focus to summer programs happening in San Diego, plus reading recommendations for kids. That's ahead on Midday Edition. Thinking about where to take the kids this summer? Well, a museum is a good place to start. Many museums offer exhibits and programming specifically for children and their education, but that doesn't mean adults can't enjoy or learn from them too. On today's show, we're talking about how to engage your kids in art, science, and literature, and what makes a museum one of the best places to do it. I'm joined by Tara Young, an independent museum professional and lecturer at Tufts University in their Museum Studies program. Tara, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad you're here. So what makes a museum the optimal space for learning?
Museums are great places to learn because they're set up and designed for families and kids to learn together. So for intergenerational learning. Learning, especially learning through play, is important for children, but it's just as important for their grown-ups that they're with on their museum visit as well.
Yeah, and there's a method behind all of this. I mean, there's a philosophy behind play. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yes, the more a child or anyone of any age really can get engaged in play, the more they're sort of making those learning connections and bringing it to life. So it's not just about sort of reading something or listening to some, you know, a message, but really figuring out a way that families and children can be hands-on, can experiment, can fail, can make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. And that's how a message really gets sort of cemented into your thinking process. And also then can be something you go back to later. Because I think what most museum educators and curators are hoping for is that the museum experience is not a one and done thing, but it's something that you think back on, remember, and then build upon with your next visit or the next museum you go to.
Well, so what makes an exhibit really engaging for kids?
I think a couple of things. One is having some sort of hands-on component, whether it's an art activity or a manipulative or a way that a kid can play with a science concept. The other way that exhibitions can be engaging is if there's some way for a child or a family to participate in terms of reactions. So having a way for the visitor to kind of put their own mark on an exhibition, whether that's through some sort of a feedback opportunity or discussion space, conversation area, some way to sort of put their own stamp on the exhibition rather than passively consume it.
Yeah. And we know representation can be really powerful too. How do you make something like an exhibit relevant to kids?
I think museums have different ways of doing that. And it really comes down to the thesis of an exhibition or the theme they're going for. And really from the very beginnings of thinking about what a museum is going to show for an exhibition, thinking about why should kids care about this? Why should families want to engage? And then really, you know, that's the task of the museum team, the educators and the curators, to kind of get some feedback, run some focus groups, talk to visitors and get a sense of, you know, what really makes the theme resonate with visitors. If it doesn't resonate with visitors, then they're not going to be able to kind of receive it in a way and aren't going to be able to learn about it as effectively if they don't feel some connection to it.
Mm. Well, you know, the pandemic shutdown was devastating for many museums. Has that changed their approach at all when it comes to exhibits or events?
Well, You know, the pandemic was very devastating for a lot of museums. And I think one silver lining is that it gave museums a chance to sort of press pause and think about prioritization and how we reach people, how we can be the most beneficial to our communities. Audiences are coming back to museums. And now I think museums are, you know, trying to think about what works best and what maybe they can let go from before the pause. So I think trying to be really strategic about what is the best type of exhibition or program to attract people and to, you know, really build relationships with people for the long term.
Well, are you seeing any other trends across the country, like using less technology in exhibits, for example?
Yes, that's an interesting one. I mean, museums definitely are interested in technology and how technology can be used to learn in new ways. But there's also a belief at many museums, especially children's museums and museums where that really emphasize hands-on, to get away from technology, to give families an opportunity to sort of, you know, get away from the screen, get their hands dirty, do something that's really about being present in the moment and in the space. So you'll see sort of both ends of the spectrum. You'll see museums who are really experimenting with technology where it's an appropriate tool to help them reach the learning goals they have. And you'll also see museums turning away from technology and, you know, getting back to the basics in a way.
And, you know, you also work with teachers. Many kids experience museums for the first time through school trips or visits. Is that different from maybe going with the family in your eyes?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there are definitely some similarities, meaning that either a family or a school group, in a sense, they're both intergenerational groups, you know, whether it's parents, kids, and grandparents, or whether it's teachers, students, and chaperones. Usually when teachers go, they have a specific learning goal in mind. They have a curriculum connection that they're hoping to make. So it's usually more focused on one particular topic or subject when a child goes with school, whereas with a family visit, it might be more open-ended and more exploratory. But they both definitely have benefits. And as you said, it may be going with a school group may be the first time that a child has an opportunity to go to a museum. And that's why it's especially important to make sure that our schools are taking advantage of what museums have to offer so that we can expand the access that children have to museums.
And you've been working in this field for a long time. How do you see museums evolving and serving kids and, you know, making it a really special experience?
Yeah, I think the biggest change that I've seen over the past couple of decades is museums. You know, museums were founded to kind of be places that cared for collections, whether it's objects or natural history specimens or works of art. And over time, that shift has been from being about the collection to really being about the visitor. And so having a much more community-focused, sort of human-focused experience while still caring for the collections that we're responsible for. So I think that, you know, making sure that the visitor has the best experience is really the goal of every museum. And museums want to know what visitors are thinking and what visitors want to see. So, you know, I really encourage people to talk to the staff when they're at a museum, for teachers to learn about the museum and what museums have to offer, to ask questions, because museum staff love nothing more than to talk to their patrons and to find out, you know, what makes people tick and what they want to see.
I've been speaking with Tara Young, independent museum professional and lecturer at Tufts University Museum Studies Program. Tara, thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you.
Still ahead, we'll talk about what our local museums are offering this summer.
I think of museums in San Diego as an ecosystem. You might start off with the Children's Museum, and then you move on to the Fleet, and you move on to the Nat, and you keep exploring and exploring.
Hear more when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. We've been talking about museums and how they can really cultivate a sense of curiosity and wonder in kids. Well, the Birch Aquarium and the New Children's Museum are two places doing just that. Their summer programs engage kids with art, science, and so much more. Megan Dickerson is the creative director of exhibits at the Birch Aquarium. Megan, hi.
Hi, Jade.
And Gabrielle Weirich is the chief curator and director of audience engagement at the New Children's Museum. Gabrielle, welcome.
Good to be with you.
So glad to have you both here. So Gabrielle, I'll start with you. Tell us a bit about what you do at the New Children's Museum.
I oversee the art and engagement umbrella of the New Children's Museum, which includes all of our exhibitions, our programs, ranging from education programs to studio programs, our community engagement initiatives, as well as our amazing floor team of staff who work with visitors on a daily basis.
And Megan, I heard you have a master's in play, which sounds pretty cool. What does that entail and how does it influence your work at the aquarium?
People think I'm making it up when I say it, but it's a real thing.
Wow.
I study play. I'm interested in play across the lifespan. And I think play is really something that makes us who we are. So at Birch Aquarium, I'm trying to create amazing human habitats for play and learning that go along with the habitats that we're known for our animal collection.
Wow. Well, you and Gabrielle actually have a working relationship that goes way back.
We've known each other for what, 15 years, 20 years now?
At least. And it's been such a pleasure. I've learned so much from Megan, and we've had a really great collaboration over these past several years.
Yeah, and we started to work together over youth and engaging young people in museums. At the time, we were both running teen programs at the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston, as well as Boston Children's Museum. And I really think about, you know, throughout the lifespan. So what are the place for young people in museums, whether that's as, you know, employees in some of the cases where we were working or, you know, just engaging, continuing to engage. So it's not just when you're a kid or when an adult that you all have a place for everybody in museums.
That's great. Well, you know, before we get into the specific exhibits that you all have, do you have a philosophy or something that really guides you when curating them? Gabrielle, I'll start with you.
Sure. I mean, at the New Children's Museum, this is a very distinctive place. And one of the reasons why it's so distinctive is because we are one of the very few, if not the only, contemporary art-centered museum for children, youth, and multi-generational audiences. So I think that here at the New Children's Museum, you know, we are guided by the fact that the arts can be central to your life throughout the lifespan, as Megan says, in regards to play. And we like to think that here at the New Children's Museum, this is where a lot of young people in the city have their first engagement to the arts, and it can continue to be a spark throughout their life trajectory.
And Megan, what about you?
First of all, I love that. And I love, Gab, that you're there now. I worked at New Children's Museum for about 10 years. And I think of museums in San Diego as a ecosystem. You might start off with the Children's Museum, and then you move on to the Fleet, and you move on to the Nat, and you keep exploring and exploring. I think that my philosophy is really around creating spaces for community and for people to engage not only with the content, not only to engage with the ocean, but to really engage with each other. A really great exhibit space, a really great curated space, has something to inspire you and also literally someplace to sit. You know, we don't think about sitting as much as we should in museums, because the more you're sitting there and you're engaging with each other, you start to kind of chat. I see it a lot at the New Children's Museum, and I see it here at the aquarium, especially in some of the spaces that we've created now for a multi-age audience. As children are engaging with one piece, the grown-ups start chatting around the outskirts.
And like you mentioned, you know, play isn't just limited to kids. I mean, it's also intergenerational. How are you involving adults in all this?
I can speak to that at the New Children's Museum. You know, I think that all of our spaces are certainly designed with young people at the center, but when they are at their best, they really have an entry point for all ages. And, you know, as Megan mentioned, bring people together across generations and backgrounds. So, you know, I think we're always thinking about that and looking at that in our exhibition design, but also in the programs that we offer and the type of programs that we're offering across the board.
Yeah, to build on that, Gab, I've always said that children's museums have this incredibly diverse group of people, because often for the adults there, the only thing that they have in common is the love of a child, whether they're a teacher or a grandparent or any other kind of caregiver. And I think that here at the aquarium, it's also, people have a love of animals. And that's really powerful, you know, wanting to come and see an octopus, wanting to be together. Both of them are very social experiences. And I think in this moment of great stress and crises, multi-crises all across dimensions of our living, to have spaces where you can just come together, take a deep breath and say, okay, we're here right now in this moment. I think that that prepares people to really connect with each other in a way that you don't get at if you're really just focusing on learning goals over and over. I think that's something that the aquarium and the New Children's Museum really have in common, is that we're really about that experience that leads to what's next, you know, where it's more open-ended.
Wow. Well, the pandemic, I remember it shut down a lot of places, museums especially. It also affected kids' mental health at that time. So I'm curious, have you had to navigate that?
Well, I can certainly speak to that here at the New Children's Museum. You know, as you mentioned, certainly museums and institutions across the board were deeply affected. And we were one of the longest museums closed in the city of San Diego, being a high-touch children's museum. And when we reopen, I think, you know, it's been a learning curve for all of us here on staff. You know, I think there are desperate needs for young people to come together in social settings and in community-centered spaces, because they were lacking those opportunities so much, you know, over the COVID pandemic. And I think the mental health crisis is something that we all really have to pay attention to. And young people are struggling with this. And this is something that we've seen. So one of the centers of focus for us over the past few years has been looking at social emotional learning through the visual arts. How can we use the visual arts as a means of developing our self and mental capacity and wellness? And how can we provide opportunities for that here at the New Children's Museum, both through our programs and our exhibitions?
Megan, do you have anything to add to that?
I was there during the pandemic, and then Gab has taken over. And I'd be curious to have a longer conversation about, you know, the difference between kids before and after. You know, I've always thought about these kinds of spaces in terms of emotional health and mental health. In the UK, there's a project called the Happy Museum, where many museums are government run. And the government is thinking about museums as part of a larger mental health network, really thinking about it as part of the health programs offered by the government. And I think that that's really true. When we're doing it well, that's happening. You know, I mean, Birch Aquarium, of course, we have this beautiful ocean view. And a lot of times we're like, we're more than just the view. But our subject is that view. Our subject is the ocean, right? Right? And the more you look at the ocean, it's been proven that there is this thing called blue mind, that your body changes, your mind changes when you're looking at the water. And so I really think about, you know, New Children's Museum continued to do outreach during the pandemic, even though the physical plant was closed. Birch Aquarium reopened pretty quickly. It was one of the first to reopen. And that's from what I've been told. I wasn't here yet, but that was a big part of it, is we need to continue serving our community and creating spaces where it is safe to be together and have that engagement play in particular, whatever your particular play signature is, right? Everybody's play is different, but to have room for that, for everybody to express that.
Yeah, there's so much to be gleaned from that. But I'm curious, Gabrielle, let's talk about like what you've got going on this summer. You have an Octavia Butler exhibit that opened up earlier this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a lot going on this summer, and I'm very excited to talk about all of them. One, as you mentioned, is an exhibition that opened in the spring called Octavia E. Butler, Seeding Futures. And also, it's great to mention that here because Megan was actually here, was one of the core originators of that exhibition in its development process, and is part of our advisory for that exhibition. So that is an exhibition that is about the life and legacy of science fiction writer Octavia E. Butler, who was born and raised and lived the majority of her life in Southern California. So it's really looking at what drove her inspiration as an early creative in California growing up, but also looking at science fiction as a medium across the board, or a genre, right? To think about possible futures that are more hopeful, that are more expansive, that lead to different outcomes, and providing a space for young people to really use that imagination drive to think of those things. That's one thing that we have going on. Then, you know, we have our ongoing summer camp programs, which are always so much fun. So throughout the summer, all the way until the first week of August, we run two summer camps each week for 5 to 7 year olds and 8 to 10 year olds. And those really are just such like a lively inclusion into our space. And then throughout the summer, we have ongoing drop-in workshops and our very popular paint and clay patio studio. And the one thing I do want to mention is we are in the final stages of a renovation project currently, which will allow us to open a large-scale artist-grade studio space for young people that is likely going to open at the beginning of this coming fall. So that is something our team is working on intently, and will provide a whole range of art making opportunities for young folks from the younger ages all the way through high school.
Oh, that's excellent. That includes toddlers then, right?
Oh, definitely toddlers. Yeah, we have an incredible toddler program here. And this expanded space will allow us to serve them even more in greater number and greater impact.
Wow. Well, Megan, Birch Aquarium also has a lot going on in exhibits and events. Tell us about it. Tell us about what all is going on.
Well, if you haven't checked it out, you should. Hold Fast is a new exhibition that runs through Labor Day. It focuses on our local kelp forests. We have a beautiful kelp forest habitat that is a hallmark of Birch Aquarium, that you can see all kinds of kelp forest animals. But what does it feel like to actually walk through a kelp forest? Unless you're a diver, unless you're a scuba diver or a free diver, you probably haven't experienced that. So we have created with Oriana Poindexter, the artist, a forest of kelp silk panels. So it's actual kelp images printed on silk that you can move through. It's beautiful music playing. And then on the background, back wall, is prints from Dwight Huang, a Gyotaku artist. So you can see a giant sea bass. You can see a mola mola. You can see all kinds of animals, including a lobster, printed on the wall. And our intent with this is to really give people of all ages, but particularly the younger versions of us, a space to swim through a forest, to understand how beautiful our local kelp forests are, particularly as they're faced with warming water impacts from climate change. So that's something I'm really excited about. Well, and then we also have, as part of that, Shark Summer.
All right.
We're going to go from not just Shark Week. We do whole Shark Summer. So July 13th through 31st, we are focusing on sharks, particularly our local leopard sharks. We have special shark feedings, kelp forest dives, trivia night, and a weekend that we will be focusing on sharks very specifically. You're actually if you'd like to, you can enter the aquarium through a giant shark jaw, inflatable shark jaw. So it was a really exciting way of connecting people of all ages, particularly kids, with some of the specialists that we have here, the people who care for our sharks, so they can really understand how these animals work.
Yeah, well, all of these events sound great. Are there discounts or free hours that people can check out?
Well, I know Gab and I would probably both talk about Museums for All, right, Gab?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have several discount programs here at the New Children's Museum. One is Museums for All, which I'm sure Megan will talk about at the Birch as well. We also have an ongoing program here called Prescription for Art and Play, where young people in their 3, 4, and 5 wellness visits with a selection of clinics here in San Diego get free memberships to the New Children's Museum. So if folks are interested in that, they can check online Prescription for Art and Play for that free membership program.
Oh, that's excellent. And, you know, I'm sure you're seeing lots of kids and families come in, especially over these past few months. Is there anything that you've really noticed when it comes to how they're engaging with these exhibits?
One thing I love about working in an aquarium is that often adults and children are seeing an animal for the first time together. It's a shared experience. So I think there is that enthusiasm for seeing a, you know, Pacific lump sucker, the enthusiasm for seeing a moray eel. I think that we're also seeing that we need more spaces for kids to really let loose and move. We have Imagination Playground on our back Blue Beach exhibit. And, you know, places like Hold Fest, as I mentioned, where you can really just spend some time, where kids can really see this is a space for me. It's also for other people, right? But kids can see their place in it. I'm seeing us come back, I think, from some of the isolation that we were seeing the after effects from. I'm seeing kids play in a way that I remember them playing before the pandemic. And I don't know if that's the case for you too, Gab.
Yeah, I definitely think really what brings me joy about working in a space like this is, you know, walking through the galleries and seeing so many people, you know, family groups, which really end up being people across ages, just having truly a space where they can suspend, you know, their worries for the day and really lose themselves in the magic, right, of arts engagement and play together in a way that brings them together, but also, you know, imbues them with a sense of joy in a way that isn't necessarily present in so many other spaces.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is seeing people come rope until 7 o'clock through Labor Day. And I see people coming after work with their kids and only for sometimes a half an hour, 45 minutes, right? But it's that same thing you're describing, Gab. It's just a moment to be together and to share a space. And the more you're coming to these kinds of spaces, the more you're creating that larger sense of community. Like I said, the only thing that people have in common usually coming to our spaces is that they love a kid or they love animals. And I think in a place where we're often so distanced from each other, we're often so segregated in our neighborhoods, places like the Children's Museum and Birch Aquarium are really essential for that overall mental health of our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is so therapeutic, and play is something we all need. I've been speaking with Megan Dickerson. She's the director of exhibits at the Birch Aquarium. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Also, Gabrielle Weirich, chief curator and the director of audience engagement at the New Children's Museum. Gabrielle, thanks to you too.
Thank you for having me. It's been a really fun conversation.
So great to have you both. To find out more, you can check out kpbs.org, where we're linking to each museum's website.
Coming up, reading programs and book recommendations.
It's just about finding that child's interest and then offering some reading recommendations. There's a book out there for everyone.
KPBS Midday Edition returns after the break.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalich, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. We're highlighting all sorts of ways you can keep your kids busy this summer. Libraries and bookstores also have so much to offer. It's a good opportunity to get your young people excited about reading if they aren't already. Susie Horn is co-owner of Joyride Bookshop. Hi, Susie.
Hi, so happy to be here.
And Katia Graham is founder of Librarian on the Go. Katia, welcome back to Midday.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. Susie, Joyride actually started out as a bookstore on wheels. I remember the bookmobile when I was a kid and how exciting that was. What inspired you to start Joyride?
Yeah, my friend and co-owner, Katie Turner, and I started dreaming about opening a children's bookstore around 2019. And we decided to start mobile because we wanted to provide high quality stories to children in lots of different communities around San Diego. And the truck really felt like the best way to do that. And it allows us to curate the selection of books based on the needs of a particular group or community. And then the truck itself is just an enchanting way to deliver books to kids. It's literally child size, which is a lot of fun.
Katia, you've been running Librarian on the Go for a while now. Talk about what it is and why you started it.
Sure. So Librarian on the Go was founded in the fall of 2023, and it is a catalyst to encourage reading and community engagement. Librarian on the Go can be contracted to offer a la carte librarian services because librarianship is so relevant and useful that it can benefit different organizations. So it's a way to show that librarianship can exist outside of the traditional library space.
And as someone who's been in library branches all over San Diego, why do you think libraries are really the place to be this summer?
Because they're community hubs. They're putting the people they serve in touch with all sorts of different learning opportunities. You can check out books at the library, of course, but you can also check out interests, even those you didn't even know that you had yet. And in the summertime, you may have heard of the summer slide, and that is what libraries work to combat. So studies have shown that kids can regress in reading literacy and in math literacy over the summer months, right, when they're out of school for an extended period of time. So that's why libraries have their flagship program, the summer reading program.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, sometimes it's like a battle with the iPad or a video game controller. So how do you get kids excited about reading? Susie, I'll start with you.
Sure. Yeah. There's lots of ways to get kids really excited about reading. One thing that comes immediately to mind is the graphic novel form of literature. It's great for everybody, but for reticent readers in particular, it really helps build those reading skills because they're so engaging. They can help with visual reading comprehension and visual literacy, and they can feel less overwhelming than picking up a chapter book with kind of a wall of text and no pictures. Another thing that comes to mind are seek and find stories or books for younger kids that are just more interactive and allow kids to search for elements hidden within a picture, for example, as they read along. So a few ideas there.
Very nice. Katia, what about you?
Yeah, so I think it's about what makes your reader tick. When kids walk into the library, they are going to have access to a children's librarian, and that librarian can conduct a reference interview. So the librarian might start by asking the child, what's the last book you read that you really enjoyed? Maybe that child's wearing some dinosaurs on their shirt, and the librarian can walk them over to the nonfiction section where all the dinosaur books are. Maybe your child likes jokes. Maybe they're a reticent reader, like Susie said, but maybe they really like jokes. Well, there's a lot of joke books in the library. So it's just about finding that child's interest and then offering some reading recommendations. There's a book out there for everyone.
That sounds like a good plan there. Susie, you mentioned, you know, how Joyride carries a diverse selection of books that represent a diverse range of experiences. Talk about why that is so important.
So we think a lot about this idea of windows and mirrors that are important to both libraries and bookstores when we're deciding what goes on our shelves. So windows and mirrors is a term coined by Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop, and it's a way of thinking about how children can use story to understand themselves and the world around them. So stories that are mirrors allow them to see themselves and their families and their culture in the stories that they read. And that's really important. And window stories allow readers to experience lives and places and cultures that are different from their own. So when we're thinking about what belongs on our shelves, we want all children to feel seen first and foremost, and then also to learn something new about the world.
And in your experience, what are parents and families often looking for when they step into the bookstore?
Well, so often they really connect with a book that does mirror their lives back to them. You'll see just pure delight on their faces, which is really wonderful. And then also there's a lot of curiosity about looking at experiences that are totally, completely different. So really, it's a little bit of everything that we can offer.
And Katia, do you have anything to add to that and the significance of telling diverse stories?
It's crucial. Just like Susie was saying, builds a child's confidence when they see characters like them that remind them of something about their home life or the way that their family is represented in books. I just, at the Museum of Contemporary Art, when we were doing a story time the other day, we read a book called De Aquí Como el Coqui, which is Coqui in the City in English by Nomar Perez. And it's about a boy who moved to New York from Puerto Rico and had to leave his little pet frog behind. So that's an example of why it's so important to feel represented in the books that you're reading.
Yeah. Katia, you do a lot of story times through Librarian on the Go. In your experience, what stories are children really connecting with?
So children are so excited, especially when you're excited to be there, you know? And it depends on the theme of the story time. But one thing that sets Librarian story times apart is that they try to incorporate pillars of early literacy, which include singing. So there'll be a book and a song, and it all adds to the excitement. And then maybe at the end, kids will have a chance to stay and play with toys that are available at the library. So that's just a winning recipe. Parents want an idea for how to get kids excited about reading, really get them in the library at an early age.
Yeah. And Susie, you also do a lot of storytime events at Joyride. Talk about that and how you're seeing kids get excited.
We do. Yeah. We love story times. We have them every Wednesday at 10 a.m. at our location inside the new Children's Museum. And we are always looking for stories that connect with kids. And often for the kiddos at the museum, they tend to be a little younger in age. So we're looking at stories that are silly and fun, that allow us to move our bodies and to have conversations together about whatever the particular theme is that day.
Well, you know, I asked both of you to compile a few recommendations for us. So Susie, I'll start with you.
Sure. So in the picture book genre, I would love to recommend Barrio Rising by Maria Dolores Aguila. We actually just welcomed her to the museum this weekend for a story time. And it's a story about the creation of Chicano Park here in San Diego. And it would be lovely to pair the reading of that book with a trip to Chicano Park. So that's one suggestion. In the middle grade genre, The One and Only Family by Catherine Applegate has just come out, which is the fourth adventure for the One and Only Ivan series. So that's a really great one. And then for young adult, I gotta plug The Children of Anguish and Anarchy by Tomi Adeyemi, which is the final book in that Children of Blood and Bone trilogy. That's just amazing.
Yeah. And Katya, what about you?
So we all know about the 2024 Olympics in Paris. So why not read The Little Prince, which is a national treasure in France and can familiarize yourself with something that I think speaks to the French culture, which is that what's important is not seen with the eyes necessarily. It is seen with the heart. And The Little Prince really epitomizes that. Another book that I have enjoyed reading lately is called Hoy Me Siento, which is Today I Feel, and it is by Madalena Moniz. It's really a picture book, so it'll take you through the alphabet in Spanish, so you can familiarize yourself with that. There's an extra letter, an ñ, and have your kids describe the pictures, and then they'll be able to tell you what that word in Spanish means. You know, A is for audaz or audacity, for example. And just by looking at that picture of the letter A, your child will be able to describe that feeling. And maybe they'll tell you how they're feeling today, too.
Excellent. All great recommendations. So what other events do you all have coming up? Susie, I'll start with you on that one.
We are really excited about the North Park Book Fair coming up in October. We are always there with our truck, so you'll find us there. And then we are planning a few upcoming events with the nonprofit art and maker space called Revision here in San Diego. So we'll give more information on that as it becomes available on our Instagram.
And Katya, what about you?
So lots of great things ahead. I'm working with City Ballet of San Diego, and they are doing a book and a ballerina story times all over city libraries. The next one is on July 25th at 10:30 at the Mission Valley Library. There'll be a ballerina there. She'll talk about her job. I'll read a story that has to do with the ballet. There is also Read with a Ranger programs that are held by California State Parks. And those are all over San Diego public libraries as well. California State Parks has the schedule on their Instagram. And I'm going to be providing Spanish translation at some of the story times to make them as inclusive and accessible as possible. On August 8th at 10:30, there's going to be a books and art story time at the San Diego Museum of Art. So I hope to see you there. And Prebis Play Day takes place the second Sunday of every month at the Museum of Contemporary Art from 10 to 1. They have some great themed activities to complement their exhibits. And at 12:30 is the story time.
Wow, there's a lot to check out. I've been speaking with Susie Horn, a co-owner of Joyride Bookshop. Susie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Katya Graham, founder of Librarian on the Go. Katya, thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You can find the full list of events and book recommendations on our website, kpbs.org.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the Del Mar Wine and Food Festival, happening October 2nd to 7th. Founded in partnership with Alex Morgan, Drew Brees, and Rob Machado, the festival gathers chefs from San Diego and national TV, plus athletes and culture icons. Tickets at delmar.wine.